Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. Welcome to the program, my friends, Earth Explorers all over planet Earth. Welcome to X Squared Radio. We're coming to you live from east of the Appalachian Mountains. Our AccuWindow forecast, 50 degrees, cool, and a chance of storms tonight, thunderstorms. Hopefully we don't get hit by lightning. We have been hit before on this program. Very auspicious evening, to be sure. A solar wind stream of about 431 kilometers per second is buffeting Earth's magnetic field and causing some geomagnetic activity around the Arctic Circle. High-latitude sky watchers should be alert for auroras. Sunspot 1057 is crackling with C-class solar flares. Sea flares are continuing at a rate of one every 3 to 6 hours, and NOAA forecasters estimate a 20% chance of even stronger M flares. If you have a transoceanic flight scheduled for the next couple of days, you might want to wear your lead foil hat. The Bond vigilantes are finally flexing their muscles. A long period of stability for the U.S. government bond market showed signs of cracking this week as a lack of investor appetite for new debt sent the benchmark 10-year yield to its highest level since last June. The term bond vigilantes was coined in the 1980s when bond investors pushed up the long-term yields to force central banks into taking action to curb inflation. This time, bond investors are less worried about inflation. They are fretting about huge fiscal deficits and the looming bond supply needed to finance them. What does this mean? It means that the money supply is about to dry up. Bondholders will sell, not buy. Everyone thought we would see rising rates due to higher inflation, but it appears the bond vigilantes are demanding a higher real rate due to concerns about treasury issuance, says George Concalves, head of fixed income strategy at Nomura Securities. The spotlight on Greece only helped to reveal that the U.S.'s kitchen, with federal and state budget balances, was itself full of cockroaches, says William O'Donnell, strategist at RBS Securities. We told you this was coming. I hope you have your cash out of the bank the way we advised. My new book, Remembering the Future, will be out in print in about 90 days, but we didn't want you to wait, so we put the ebook out. You can get to it at rememberingthefuturebook.com. Rememberingthefuturebook.com. Get the ebook in your hands. Get it read. When the printed version comes out, you will receive a 25% discount and the audiobook when the printed version comes out. Also, Twitter is now alive and well on X Squared Radio. I add stuff all day as we approach the announcement on the Inner Earth Expedition, the launch of the nation's first affordable electric vehicles, and other great things. So follow me, Brooks Agnew, on Twitter by searching for Brooks Agnew. Easy enough. Hey, on March 19th, just a few days ago, at 11:19 Central Time, A meteoroid entered Earth's atmosphere over the southeastern United States and disintegrated in a flash as bright as the crescent moon. To the human eye, it appeared to be a garden variety fireball, the kind that appears almost every clear night. But NASA cameras had a different story to tell. This was an unusually low-flying meteor, says Bill Cook of NASA's Meteoroid Environment Office. Cook and colleagues operate a pair of all-sky cameras, one in Huntsville, Alabama, and another in Chickamauga, Georgia. Both cameras caught the fireball, allowing rapid triangulation of its flight path. It was first recorded at an altitude of 72.9 kilometers, that's about 45 miles, and burned up at an altitude of 32.5 kilometers, that's about 20 miles. That's low. Most meteoroids disintegrate about 70 to 80 kilometers high. This one held together for a much deeper descent. Quote, it had a lot of structural integrity. Maybe it was a metallic object, speculates Cook. Based on the brightness and velocity of the fireball, he estimates a mass of about 10 kilograms and a diameter of about 20 centimeters. That's a very decent size. Cook's Meteor Mini Network is smart. When both cameras catch a fireball, the system's software springs into action and immediately calculates a flight path and orbit for the meteoroid. Cook receives an email alerting him to interesting events that might otherwise have gone unnoticed. In the near future, we plan to expand our network along the eastern seaboard of the United States, notes Cook. With smart cameras on duty, who knows what we might find. Well, tonight, we are scheduled to have Suzanne Taylor. She is a filmmaker, has made a movie called What on Earth? What on Earth is a very, very well-produced movie on crop circles. We're going to leave the lines open all night, so if you want to be part of the program, you can call in at 415-762-1161. 415-762-1161. Don't go away. 40 seconds. X Squared Radio is about to take off.
The spice extends life. The spice expands consciousness. The spice is vital to space travel.
All around the planet, in every age, in just about every media since humans have kept records, there have appeared amazing patterns left in the night. Could the Tibetan mandalas be the leftovers of a prehistoric language? Could the stunning patterns left in wheat and cornfields all over the world be messages left for us, come from off-world sources? If crop circles are all fake, how have they appeared on every continent over a 2,000-year period with near identical precision? When compiled, do they form a language with a message for the people of Earth? Well, when we get a hold of our guest tonight, Suzanne Taylor, should be about 10 minutes or so, we will follow up on that question. Many of you have emailed me of late wanting some update on the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition. You will be happy to know that Discovery Channel producers have recorded a short pilot intro. We call it a pitch in the business. And we are now discussing it. We are now discussing the expedition. Here we are in 2010, 2 years away from the final year in which the Captain Kolibnikov, the only ship, civilian ship, left on the planet that can make this voyage a reality. I know you all have been waiting. I have been waiting as well. But these kinds of things occur when they're supposed to occur. So when it comes to the expedition, I invoke the Gandalf disclaimer. Oh, the Gandalf disclaimer. You know the one I'm talking about, the one Frodo confronted Gandalf with in the first movie. You're late. With a stern look, Gandalf looked at Frodo and said, "A wizard is never late. He arrives at exactly when he's supposed to arrive." Same thing with the expedition, people. It's going to happen. We've already been there, we've already seen it, we've already realized it, and you are the beneficiary of that expedition. So trust me, we're working on it, but your consciousness, your help, your energy, and believe me, we have received thousands of emails of people who want to be part of this expedition. You are part of the expedition. You are going with us in spirit. In case you log into the website and watch the real-time footage from the cameras on deck during the 15-day record-setting, remarkable, greatest expedition in the history of the world, or whether you're actually on the ship. Now, I have had people come to me and say, "Oh, I really want to go on this expedition." I turn and say, "Really? Do you know what you're asking? Do you know what you're manifesting? Are you ready for 120-foot high seas? Are you ready for 70-mile-an-hour sub-zero winds? Are you ready for ice breaking 8 or 9 days in a row, 24 hours a day? Are you really ready for that?" I think most people experience expeditions on television or in the movies, and I think that is how we're going to bring this film to you. If you want to be part of tonight's program, Suzanne's running just a little bit late. No worries. She's going to be with us. The number is 415-762-1161. In case you have a latent question left over for March of 2010, you can easily reach us right now and pose your question, 415-762-1161. I'll tell you. The activity is incredible out there. Over the last 2 weeks, we have given probably 15 different interviews all around the country, in fact, all around the world, in the UK and the United States. Lots and lots of people are ready for this expedition. They're really fired up about that. They're fired up about HAARP. They're fired up about the incredible intensity of earthquakes and the frequency of them. Not only in Haiti, but also in Chile. And it looks like it's shaping up to be a very eventful year as we build up this crescendo toward 2012. How many 2012 specials are there going to be out there? How has 2012 affected your life? How are you preparing for 2012? Interesting questions, people. Interesting questions, and you can bring them anytime you like, to this program, 415-762-1161. Oh, also, one more update. The syndication of X Squared Radio. Everything's moving along pretty well with that. They want to brand me, which, as you know, if you're a listener to this program, I'm not terrifically comfortable with, because this program was designed to be around the information. It was designed to be the kind of program that brings you the message without me getting in the way. I'm just a facilitator. I'm just the voice behind this soft microphone. But you have indicated that you want the program to go further. You want it to go wider. You want it to reach more people. And so we've begun to take the effort to syndicate X Squared Radio. Now, we're already on the internet. You know that. BBS Radio is the most listened to internet network in the world. It is up there with the top 100 websites next to Google and Yahoo. So BBS Radio is a modern day icon. And as long as our producers will dedicate their love and their passion to this subject matter, you're going to have us here. That being said, we are about to launch into the broadcast world. That means people driving around in their cars are going to be able to hear us. We have an early caller tonight, Robin, on line one. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, I'd kind of like to kick off some of this 2012 questioning. They're running on the History Channel tonight, all this stuff about 2012 and the Mayan calendar, and they keep saying at the end of it, it's like that the Mayan calendar was the end of the calendar meant the end of the world. They're kind of inferring that, and they're talking about Nostradamus and this and a few other, you know, things too. Do you think that the Mayan calendar, I know you did some work on it in your book, Ark of Millions of Years, is that what you found the Mayan calendar to be saying, that this was the end of the world? And like they were also talking about the Hindus and the Kali Yugas and saying that this was the end also. I mean, is this like a crescendo to something that's going to end or what?
Well, I think it's an easy message to get behind. It is easy to beat the drum of doom and gloom. It's easy to look at cataclysms and catastrophes and illnesses and signs in the heavens and in the earth and say, oh my goodness, the times prophesied in Revelations are here upon us. Of course the Mayans go along with the Bible and blah, blah, blah. It's an easy parade to follow. However, that's not what we actually found in the record. If you really want to not taint it or not put on your Nostradamus goggles, you'll see that it is a time of shift. It is a dimensional change. And the best that the Mayans could describe it, it is a transition from one world to another world. It isn't necessarily the end of the world. It is the end of the old world and the ushering in of a new world, of higher energy, of greater awareness, of, I guess for lack of a better word, we can call it ascension, which doesn't mean everybody has to die and then be resurrected. It means rather that there is an awareness not unlike when Source originally said, I am. Sure, it was the end of the old Source, but it was the beginning of a new, more aware, more active, more progressive, and a fully functional Source. So when we say we're moving from the third dimension to the fourth dimension or the fifth dimension, if the Mayans had a way of saying that, I think maybe it's not so dismal. Cataclysmic? Maybe. But, you know, the end of what? Misery? Are we ready for that?
Well, you're a theoretical physicist. So what is the theoretical physicist's take on this? Because I know they're doing some studies and looking at it, too. And they're talking about, as we're moving through this procession, that, you know, we are starting, it is starting to affect the Earth a little bit, but, I mean, what do they say? I mean,
well, if, you know, physics is like English literature. There are many levels to it. If you want to talk about astrophysics, supported by groups like NASA and the European Space Agency, I would say 25% of the missions that have been launched in the last decade have been dedicated to gathering data, believe it or not, to support or refute the idea that in 2012 we're coming up to some kind of cataclysm. Now, notwithstanding even Kepler, although Kepler is an exploratory mission that was 20 years in the making, it is now out there in space looking for none other than M-class planets. Now, it's interesting to note that they have found one planet that's very, very similar to Earth, but it's 21 light years away. If Kepler is successful, we might find an escape route. We might find a way for humans to make one more leap into space as a race. Now, the other missions, like, for instance, the Themis probes that were launched in February of 2008, they were launched specifically to find the source of the auroras that occur on the Earth. Why would we be so curious about that? Don't we already know that they're caused by the solar wind? Well, guess what? We don't. The data, the more we study it, the more confused we are. We don't find a correlation between solar wind, that is to say our sun, and the auroras that occur over the north and south poles. They don't line up. They're rather seasonal compared to what the sun does. And we're even subject to radiation from elsewhere in space, a galactic wind, which we are now being significantly buffeted by. So to say that physicists support the idea that something's going to happen in 2012, you're probably right. They do, because if they didn't, they wouldn't be spending a significant amount of the budget to gather data, and I'm not even sure they would share it with us if they did find it, to support or refute the idea that in 2012 we're going to be lining up with something rather nasty.
Okay, well, if you've got, you were talking about an ascension, kind of like a potential ascension experience for conscious beings on this earth. What would that kind of look like, and how would somebody prepare for that in order to deal with it? Is this a, do we have control over this with our consciousness? Is it like Jesus says, you know, if you have the faith of a mustard seed, or I mean, how does that unfold for someone? How do they pursue, you know, preparing for that, looking at it, you know, just taking on a different approach, you know, than the normal, you know, just go to church on Sunday. I mean, if they want to kind of break out and explore and see what they can do and what they can experience with their own consciousness and that and what it has to say, how would they do that? How can...
Well, let me start with the first question. You asked, you know, are we in control of that? I would say, based on my studies and what I've learned, that is about the only thing we really are in control of. In fact, no one else is in control of that. If one has the propensity to ascend, one is ready to ascend, one is ready to have an ascension experience, mind you, that it doesn't happen all in one step. You don't walk down the street as a dark heart eating cookies and drinking milk and then boom, all of a sudden you ascend. It doesn't work like that. You have what is commonly called in the scriptures a mighty change of heart. Now, when you're faced with that moment, and it comes at different ages for different people and for different reasons, some during near-death experiences and others, you know, during a conference or during a peculiar church service. When that ascension experience is presented to you, you can either accept it or reject it. You can say, wow, I really feel differently today than I did yesterday, and I think I'm going to take a different path in my life. I'm not going to treat people the way I used to treat them. I'm not going to participate in activities that lower my frequency the way I have done in the past in my life. So in making these choices, of course you're in control. Of course you can make ascension welcome in your life or not welcome in your life. As to when it occurs, I think that's different for every single person. I just want to let you know that Suzanne is now with us, and I would very much like to continue with our regular programming. Is that okay, Robin?
Thank you. No, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your call. Earth Explorers, we are ready to do this. So we'll be back in 40 seconds with Suzanne Taylor. Don't go away.
Space travel.
Well, I'm sure you've seen them. magazines and television specials and maybe even a film or two all over the planet in almost every age. Strange patterns left in crops and sand and ice, telling a story, awakening something deep inside of us. Let's find out about it. Our guest tonight, Suzanne Taylor, is the producer and filmmaker of a movie called What on Earth. If you haven't seen it, you can order it, watch it by going to whatonearththemovie.com. whatonearththemovie.com. Our guest, Suzanne Taylor, is with us now. Welcome to the program.
Well, listen, I'm really sorry that the aliens took me for the first half hour. I pleaded with them. I told them I had a radio show to do. So thank God.
Oh, that's
great.
I mean,
you know, they know that I'm, you know, on their side, and, you know, they would never really hurt me too much, you know.
Well, I know. Most of the aliens are out there in California, too. Out here, we're all
Oh,
earthly.
Definitely. We have, yes. Every time you turn around, there's an alien, there's another one.
I got to ask you, Suzanne, what you made this remarkable film. I've watched it twice, and I wish it had pages so I could leave post-it notes all through.
Oh.
What compelled you to make this documentary, and how did it come together for you?
Well, my interest really is in saving the world, if you really want to know the truth. What can I tell you? You know, some of us get these missions. Not that we think we're, you know, egotistical maniacs who think we're going to accomplish it, but we get these kind of directives, you know, that's what we're supposed to do. So my supposed to do was change consciousness, wake up this world. We're making war? No, how can we do this? This is idiotic. Boxing? We pummel each other and senseless? No, we have to open our minds and think higher thoughts. So I've been at that for a long time, longer than I've been at the crop circles, and I've been at the crop circles since the late 80s. But my interest in this crazy world went back even before that. And I was producing all different kinds of events and programs that had to do with, you know, essentially changing consciousness or changing our worldview, changing our collective consciousness of how we see ourselves as humanity and what we think we're doing here. And the crop circles just came along as one topic. I saw pictures of them in the late 80s. A friend of mine had a son who was stationed in the military in England. And on his leave, he would go out and take these pictures and send them back to his dad. At the time, they were calling them, over in England, they were calling them landing pads for UFOs. So I looked at these landing pads. I don't really know all that much about UFOs. I mean, that wasn't one of my topics. But now, of course, I've gotten much wiser about all of that category as well. But I looked at them and I thought, whoa, what's that? I mean, they are fascinating, you know. Your first engagement with them, or your first opportunity to, you know, see what in wheat fields we're making this gorgeous art. What could that be? So I got interested and quickly got the idea that wow, if these were being delivered to us by another intelligence, it would change our world. And so I just got more and more tuned in and sort of stopped doing other things, and my focus became, you know, more and more intense on this phenomenon. And I thought, you know, of all the things in the world that I can do that are valuable and that are helpful and whatever, all the kind of stuff I've been doing, this is the thing that I can uniquely do, because there's not that many people who are really having this obsession that I have. And this topic is the one that I really can deliver on. I really can, if I can deliver, I can really make a difference. So
that's
a long answer to your question. I think I'm at the end of it.
The thing that fascinates me about the crop circles, the first time I really saw an aerial photograph of them, it was something I couldn't just page away from really quickly. It was like, wow. You know, this was a picture of, I don't know, maybe 1,000 feet in the air looking down.
Right.
And I said, man, that's really complex. How long did that take to make? And you read further and it says, well, it happens overnight. What do you mean overnight? And how many hundreds of people does it take to make this thing?
Really?
Well, it isn't made by people. It's made by strange lights in the middle of the night.
What?
Okay,
what?
Now I'm really interested, Suzanne. Where do we go from here? What do we understand about this stuff?
Are you asking where do we go from here?
Yeah, you know,
oh, that's
the
question.
Thing is, these patterns are so,
well,
they're like iconic. They're like, gee, that looks familiar. What the heck does that mean?
Well, indeed. I mean, they're not just simplistic little nothings. You know, they are dimensional and loaded with information and intelligence and intrigue. You know, one of the reasons that I, obviously the UFO phenomenon is related in that we're talking about visitation from elsewhere. But in the UFO field, it's either, is it or isn't it? Are they real or aren't they real? And not too much beyond that in terms of, well, if they are real, what's the content? What more can we say now? I mean, obviously, if we made, you know, real contact, there'd be lots to do, lots to say. But in terms of what we can engage about prior to that, or if that doesn't happen, there's just so much to this phenomenon. It's just full of information and angles, and, you know, you can make a whole film about it, and it isn't a film about are they or aren't they, although that's certainly one of the aspects you have to deal with, but it's a film about what all the body of information is and body of, you know, perspectives and knowledge and experience and, you know, all the patterns and how are they made and what are the designs and then the speculations, what are they trying to tell us? You know, it just, I mean, we can make a movie about it, as I have.
Well, you know, let's answer the most fundamental question first, because someone who's never been exposed to them before, or someone who sits down and thinks about it for a while, realizes pretty quickly that they got to answer this question, just like you did. Are they real, or are they not real?
Yeah, well, that's the prime directive question, yes.
What does it mean, are they real?
Well, real is not right the right word, is it? I mean, what they mean, that's the shorthand for, is it a real phenomenon, or is it some kind of perpetration by people who are trying to fool you into thinking there's a real phenomenon? So, of course,
well,
that is what the question means.
Let's talk about the perpetration just for a moment. Let's see if we can get that out of the way. If they were to be faked, and I understand that there have been a couple of individuals that have come forward and said, yes, 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 we made this one and we made that one. What, I have several questions about this. What stops them from making a mistake in the middle of the night? Oh, gee, my string broke, or I got hung up on this stick over here, and we've already made this pattern halfway in the wheat. We better get out of here. Are there any bad crop circles out there?
Well, you do see some where the pattern isn't complete, or it does, one part doesn't match another part. That's actually the indication that you're dealing with a hoax one. I want to say about five things at once here. Now I have to do it one at a time. Okay.
I'm doing the same thing. Go ahead.
Right. So the astonishing thing is that these incredibly complex patterns are I don't know whether to say more than not. You know, the hoax, that's what's kind of distracting me here, because there really is a, unfortunately, lots of hoaxing. I think more so than there was in the early years, and we don't want to, you know, be deceptive about that, but that's not the point. I mean, the point is that there's a real phenomenon. And then the hoaxers are kind of like the terrorists of the crop circle world. And as I say, one of the ways you will see formations that are quite lovely in their concept, you might say, or in some aspect of their execution, but the geometry's off, or, you know, or they're incomplete. You'll see, oh, that there's an arm over there, and there's not a corresponding arm. Not that they're all geometric like that, but many of them are, where it's supposed to. You can quite clearly see that the design intended to be symmetrical, and then something's left out. Ah, signal that, you know, was not made by us. But I also wanted to go back. You mentioned being made overnight. In fact, there have been a fair number of eyewitness accounts, not quite sure of how many because nobody's collecting in a central spot, but if I had a guess, I would say there have been maybe 40 eyewitness accounts going way back, going into the 40s, actually, when I think the first ones came in. And there was a Center for Crop Circle Studies that disbanded some years ago, but they used to collect these things, and they put out a little information booklet at one point, and I think there were 25 in the booklet. Now, they've been gone for some years, and there have been more since then. So I'm estimating we've got maybe 40 or so eyewitness accounts. And they all say the same thing. They all say that they go down in seconds. I mean, these are people who just happen to be there when, you know, close enough proximity that they could actually see this thing forming. And they say they go down in 6 or 7 seconds. You saw my little simulation in my film of one of the swirling, you know, the crop going down. And that is what they see. All of a sudden, it swirls down, and 6 or 7 seconds, you've got the whole formation. Just another of the awesome aspects of all of it.
Now, that really is fascinating. And one of the other things about the difference between one that looks like it's been stomped down with a piece of 4x8 plywood and one that lays down the way you just described is the actual condition of the crops. Now, can we describe that a little bit?
Well, as you saw in the film, I took a picture of one that was an ad for Hello Kitty, and those are not hoaxed. When they do ads, they're done in daylight, and the farmer has been paid, and nobody's trying to fool anybody. They're just doing their thing, you know. The hoaxers know how to do that. And it's just a mess on the ground. Now, you can't tell that from the air, and that's their ad. Their ad is always photographed from the air. They're never inside the crop circle doing the ad. They only want to show you the pattern. And you can't tell from the air what the ground lay looks like. As long as it's down, it serves the purpose of indicating the pattern. But when you get in them, which is such a graphic example in the film, you see that this mess of you know, muddle on the ground in Hello Kitty is contrasted to one of the mysterious crop circles of which we don't know the origin, and it's like a carpet. Everything's laying down beautifully. It's all as if, you know, many different fingers kind of carefully laid the stalks down parallel to one another. So, indeed. But, you know, I think the hoaxers have gotten better at that also, because we have some indication. You know, sometimes you know something's hoaxed because the central people who are in charge will be looking for a team. And a drawing will be seen, and there's an invitation to join the team to go out and make it. And the next day, there it is, and see, oh, yeah, I know that one's hoaxed because they were recruiting a team to make it the day before. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And, you know, they've actually gotten better at the lays also. The lays are looking pretty good. You know, the Mayan ones, I'm trying to remember what year. I think it was 2006 when the first of those arrived. And it was good enough to make the cover of several crop circle books and publications and what have you. And that's the one that actually startled people when they discovered that was one of the ones that they'd been recruiting for the night before. And it actually took them 2 nights to make it. It wasn't complete the first night. And it was discovered, and, oh, crop circle. And then the next night it had all this detail in it that it hadn't had the day before. And that one was like, whoa, they've gotten some better technology now. They're better at it. They're making it harder to discern what's going on. But,
well,
you know,
I know
at some level also,
there have been some really, really great ones. Like a couple of years ago, one showed up and had like 366 circles in it, and it was a big swirling pattern. It was probably 450 feet in diameter. It ostensibly occurred in one night, and the symmetry was just stunning. And one of the strange things that I noticed about that particular one, when it was analyzed, when people went down there with magnetometers and different kinds of instruments to sense the energy actually inside the pattern itself, there was a difference between the energy inside the pattern and the background energy just out there where the crop was growing.
Oh, yeah, they do take the gizmos in, and yes, indeed.
Well, what is the difference? And I guess as an instrumental analyst myself, I think about it, you know, is the energy pattern the result of the energy that laid the wheat down, or is it because the wheat has been redirected and all laying in this pattern that the life force of the wheat itself is causing this energy?
Well, who knows? You're asking a question that I've never heard any speculation on why. All we pay attention to is that the hoax circles don't give you any, the gizmos don't give you anything, and the mysterious circles, you get all this response from, you know, your instruments that are trying to pick up radioactivity or electromagnetism, whatever. It's not exactly my field, so if I'm not using the right words, forgive me.
Well, that's exactly what I wanted to know. Is there a difference between a hoaxed pattern and one that that has the authentic feel to it when you walk inside of it with instruments? Can you tell the difference between one that's...
Yes, definitely. I'm telling you, the instruments won't give you anything when you're in a hoaxed formation, and they go, you know, they buzz a lot. I don't know, you know, the instruments are not designed, I don't think, to give you particular content of analysis of some sort, but what they do pick up is the fact that, whoa, they are reacting to some disturbance or something that untoward, something that doesn't happen when people stomp crop down. So something has left energy or, well, you know, here we go. We get batteries that drain, brand new batteries. People, you see the girl in my film that's sitting in the middle of the circle quite puzzled because there she is with her camera had brand new batteries when she came in, and she's sitting there with this drained battery, you know. And cell phones, they won't work in the circle, and you just, even as we, again, show in the film, this person went around the whole perimeter of a formation, and he put the cell phone out with just his arm, you know, over the standing crop that wasn't a part of the formation. Cell phone signal was fine. He brought it back in. Cell phone signal wasn't there. You know, something's going on, some disturbance or, you know, what shall we call it? Something has happened when the genuine thing is in play.
What about the wheat itself? I mean, does the farmer just combine this all up in one big bunch, or is the wheat inside the pattern ever collected and harvested and bread made out of it? I mean, does the grain itself have a different quality or a different density than grain outside the circle?
Well, they've made beer out of it now. Is the fact that I'm not a beer drinker salient? No. I know they made beer, but I never saw it. Who knows? I mean, maybe people got high in a whole new way. And they've made flower essence stuff, like the Bach flower remedies. They've made that too. Although there isn't much reporting back about any effect. Oh, I've actually made cookies. I used regular flour, but I pounded down some of the. So I think all my friends are very buzzy. And, yeah, I like to think that it's because they ate my cookies. But nobody's ever really made a commercial product out of it. And in terms of what can be done, I don't know that you're asking me this, but if people don't, walk in the formations, the harvester can actually pick it up. It doesn't lay flat enough. It's springy, you know. It doesn't lay flat enough to the ground to lose the crop. But the minute people walk in it, of course, forget it. You know, they can't pick up the crop anymore. But in the good circles, then we feel sorry for the farmer. He's lost his crop, and particularly the big ones. I think the one you were talking about is the size of actually of two football fields. The biggest one ever. It came in 4,000. Yeah, right. It came in 2001. And it was awesome. I spent a lot of time in that one. Perfect. You know, there were actually 409 separate circles in a pattern up of circles, a very geometric pattern actually called a Catherine wheel, which seems to be from the Bible somehow. And, you know, you walk around in the middle of the night the size of two football fields, and even if you had a huge team, which, I mean, God knows if you tried, you would have had to have had a huge team. I mean, nobody kind of, it was very dry wheat. The minute you touch dry wheat, it gives, you know. So these were perfect circles. So what? Nobody misstepped. Nobody bent over. Nobody whatever. You know, that was one of the ones. In fact, there's a major hoaxing team that gets most of the attention, although there are others as well now. And they were puzzled. They actually put out a statement that said, well, there's one we can't figure out.
Oh, my goodness. Now, what about the hoaxers? Let's talk about them just a little bit. These are people that are evidently are very skilled. They go out, they lay the wheat down, they make beautiful patterns. What do they feel when they're making a crop circle? Do they feel?
Oh, you're going to have to ask a hoaxer about that. They don't talk to us much.
Oh, they don't.
No. Well, they taunt us, actually. You can't really have a civil conversation they're different. There are different people. You know, this is not one persona. Some of them, I must tell you, are among the most despicable people you would ever want to meet. They send out emails. One of them attended a crop circle event, a public event, and went around with his cell phone snapping pictures of the major people in the research community when they were, you know, yawning or making, you know, everybody, if you catch the right picture, doesn't look so good. Well, he caught just the pictures where everybody looked ghoulish. And then he sent out a big email with all those pictures on it. I mean, these are nasty folk. Now, they're not all like that, though. This team I'm telling you about is rather sophisticated, and they have some decent art portfolios. They're not, you know, their artwork is okay, but they take some relish in deception, and in not only deception,
so they're like metaphysical anarchists.
Well, I guess you could say that. They gloat over having having fooled you, and even less nice than that. I once tried actually to go out on one of the hoaxer expeditions, and a hoaxer was befriending me, and you know, it's like the television shows go over there to make films, the cable stations, and they'll interview the researchers, and the researchers feel, God, they just said the most interesting things, and the interviewer was really interested in what they had to say, and it was all so exciting, and then you see the product that gets turned out, and they've cherry-picked to deride the phenomenon, to make it look bad, to make it look silly, to make the people speaking look silly, to the point where there are certain stations where the real researchers won't even they won't go on their programs anymore because they know they're being fooled and seduced and whatever. Well, the hoaxers are kind of like that. You know, they're playing in that kind of deceptive territory in all ways. The particular situation I was in, they were befriending me, and then all of a sudden these emails started to go around about what kind of character I was and how ridiculous I was. And, oh, God, you know, what? Why are you doing this? And why are they doing it? I don't know. Nobody can figure it out. I mean, they can't get any credit. If they make something good, they'd get arrested if it were known that they had made them. Why do they do it? And then you start to wonder about what's supporting them, what's funding them. That would be, if I made another movie, that's the movie I'd make. What is going on?
You'd have to follow the money and find out what's going on. Why? How are they organized?
Yeah.
How do they communicate? What equipment do they have? What transportation do they have?
Yeah.
Because, you know,
I've tried to hire investigative reporters. I've gone after a couple of them. Greg Palast was my favorite one. I don't know if you know who he is on the national scene. But he's just wonderful. He's got a good sense of humor, and he does... he revealed things about the Bush election and the machines and things about what oil is all about that I really understood in a way I never had before, what the global game is that's going on. And I went to I paid a lot of money to go to a fundraiser where I sidled my way up to sit next to him at dinner thinking, okay, I'm going to get this guy, get him interested. And I was at a round table. He's sitting on my right, and there was a table for eight. And all the people at the table were so fascinated by the fact that I knew about crop circles that they wouldn't stop talking to me. And all I wanted to do was talk to the guy next to me, Greg. So I didn't get too much chance to engage him. But, you know, the people who were doing this political reporting were so good at investigative journalism. You know, they're somehow... You'd think maybe if they were open-minded enough to be on a political admirable front politically, that, you know, they'd be open-minded about otherworldliness as well, but not so. This is a little far out for anybody doing kind of mainstream work. And so I've not been successful at luring a journalist away. Now, I haven't had big bucks to dangle in front of them, so who knows? Maybe if I get myself a really juicy funder, I can hire somebody, but I've got my preliminary work done. I keep sending Greg Palast information about Crop Circle. I think someday, you know, maybe I'll catch that guy. If anybody knows Greg Palast and listening to this show, put in a good word.
You never know. This program goes out all over the world. By the way, if you want to be part of the program and ask Suzanne a question, she's obviously discovered a lot more than she put in her film. The phone number is 415-762-1161. 415-762-1161. We're coming up to the top of the first hour. You know, when it comes to following the money on these kinds of things, now we're talking about the hoaxers. One of the more interesting responses to the face-to-face on-film interviews that you do in this great movie, What on Earth, is the gentleman who says they want nothing. They're not asking for anything.
Yeah, he says, this will blow your minds. They don't want anything from us. How odd in the world we live in. Brooks, can I also tell people to go to CropCircleMovie.com? I can, because I just did. And that's where to go to buy. We have a sale going on. When we launched this officially on the Internet, this film, we made a great bargain with free gifts and what have you. And CropCircleMovie.com is the place to go to get that. So,
okay, we've got it up now. CropCircleMovie.com. We'll put the link up when we upload
the official movie site. You can link to from there, which is quite beautiful. It's all bells and whistles and flash and fun and about the circles, about the film. But we want them to go to CropCircleMovie.com because that's the irresistible offer to buy.
Well, one of the things that I want to try to get out there is the fact that there's this isn't something that just happened of late. These patterns have been showing up a long, long time. In the very beginning of the program, in the monologue, I was talking about Tibetan mandalas and how you know, they meditate for many hours. And even if you go to the Patala in Tibet, which was built in the 7th century, they have a miniature mandala building. It has 108 rooms in it. It's a scale model building made of precious metals and gems. And monks actually concentrate on this mandala building, mentally going from room to room through it. Now, it's said that once you get through all 108 rooms, that you will reach enlightenment. But these patterns, the mix of geometric patterns, the shapes, triangles and spirals and swirling geometric and very symmetrical designs go back thousands of years. And you can't tell me that there have been thousands of years of expert hoaxers out there.
Indeed. And even when people think perhaps it's some kind of advanced technology, satellite, blah, 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 whatever, which it isn't, by the way. We could go into that as well, where that wouldn't work. But, you know, people think, well, technology will do anything. But then you say, well, what about the fact that these things have been occurring for hundreds of years? And indeed they have. The one that's cited in all Crop Circle lore is from 1678, the woodcut, the famous mowing devil woodcut. If you know anything about crop circles, you know about the mowing devil. And it's quite clearly a crop circle. It's a woodcut. That's what they were doing in the day then. Mm-hmm. And it's written in kind of old English, a little description of how the farmer didn't want to pay the harvester, and he said, let the devil do it. And then in the morning he woke up, and there was this thing. And then you look at this picture, and you go, oh, my God, that's a crop circle. I mean, there's no question about it. And that's 1678. And then, interestingly, about every 100 years, you'll find a little outcropping of something that, again, you can point to and go, oh, they're talking about a crop circle, or that's a picture, or a little flurry of whatever the literature of the day was. And then it doesn't continue. It doesn't sustain. It goes away. And then 100 years later, give or take, it's back again. And we do recreation of the story in Nature magazine, which is quite a prestigious British publication, kind of like our New England Journal of Medicine. Mm-hmm. And they had an exchange about crop circles, obviously. I mean, you just wouldn't doubt it at all, from 1890. And we show you the original post that was made, we talk this computer language now, the entry that was made by a scientist who had discovered this field with circles in them. And then there were a few other issues of that publication where letters were written back and forth. We don't mention that in there, but they were. And then they petered out, went away. And it's almost like the phenomenon needs to be paid attention to deliver. When it is paid attention to, and this is kind of all over the world, some country doesn't have them, and then all of a sudden somebody will visit England, go back home, and organize an event, and all of a sudden little crop circles start to appear. It's like when the energy is receptive, the crop circles deliver. And it wasn't until the 1970s, when this 100-year cycle came, you know, due, the late 70s, and again, the flurry took place, but this flurry didn't go away. It was picked up on, I guess, probably because of our modern communication system is so much better. At any rate, the people who were interested in it attracted more people, and they didn't stop being interested in it, and they would go out in the fields, and the original studies started to take place. And then this is now we have our full-blown phenomenon that has not gone away. It comes every year. All over the world, actually. We have about 40 other countries that, aside from England, where they get the best and the most. And, you know, we can sort of count on it. We talk about the crop circle season like it's the races, you know. But we get them, you know. There's no question. Every year they come.
I want to talk about that.
Delight in our interest in them.
I want to talk about how worldwide these things are, and we'll get more into that here in the next hour. We'll take a quick 5-minute break, get a drink, relax a little bit. We'll be right back. Don't go away. We're coming back with more X Squared Radio.
Anybody there?
Oh, yeah, we're here on X Squared Radio just listening to a little music from Muse. Well, there you have it, people. Uprising. Thought it was an appropriate song to begin our second hour with Suzanne Taylor. We're discussing her movie, What on Earth? It's a crop circle movie. I really felt good when I watched it. Really amazing content, good interviews, great man on the street feel to it. It's not one of those contrived productions. It really makes you feel good. The photography is amazing. There were some really cool things that you did in the movie, like fly in an ultralight. And
yeah.
I really like the shot where it was a zoomed-in shot of a helicopter flying over one of the crop circles, and then the camera zoomed out to show the whole crop circle, and this little bitty helicopter was just a small portion of this giant crop circle. Really amazing shot.
Well, you know what we did, actually, if you think about it, that you can see the helicopter blades turning around. Now, how can you see blades turning around? They go too fast, right? Well, in fact, you know, a lot of the time when you're up in the air shooting, your camera's jiggling, and they have, you know, control devices to reduce that. But particularly when you're up in one of those little microlights, they're jiggly, you know. They're not all that stable. And the shot, that shot that we were using, the camera was not all that steady. And if we had shown you the footage as we had it, you would have seen jiggle. So what my editor did was my editor slowed it down. And so that's why you see the blades of the helicopter turning. Now, nobody will notice that.
Oh, that's interesting. I never thought about that.
I think that's quite a dramatic shot. I mean, it's not exactly a spoiler that we're telling people because you have to see it. You know, but it is very, you know, people gasp when they see that because when you're right above the helicopter, it looks like you're above one circle, one, you know, decently sized circle. Well, there are 409 circles in that formation. That's the biggest one ever, the size of two football fields. And so when microlight, whatever we were up in, helicopter microlight, when it moves up and you can gradually see more and more and more, and then the helicopter becomes a pinpoint almost. You're up above it. You see the whole thing. It's filling your frame, and you can't even make out that it's a helicopter anymore. It's so big.
Yeah,
so that does give people a gasp.
By the way, Earth Explorers, I don't want you to be alarmed, but there's a heck of a thunderstorm outside of our studio right now. So if you hear booming, nothing's going on. It's just a little light show from Mother Nature. If it doesn't knock out the internet, which it has been known to do on this program, we had Jose Arguez on, and we were just about to make a very key point, and bam, I mean, the power just went out totally dark. Took us about a minute to get back on the air. Very auspicious indeed. let's talk about how far and wide these crop circles go. They're not just in Wiltshire, England, are they?
No, indeed. They've been in some 40 countries. Although, however many there are, usually in the last few years there have been give or take 150. Then again, you don't know how many are hoaxed, but let's just say 150. 75 in England, 75 spread out through the rest of the countries. The only other countries that get that have a phenomenon to deal with where they have enough so that, you know, there's a substantive body of formations. Germany gets a fair number, and the Netherlands get some number of them, and the rest get one or two, or we get them in the States here, although the last couple of years we haven't. But sometimes we've had eight, maybe 10, you know, in a year. And it's some fairly decent ones. You know, as you know, I have a montage of international crop circles in the film, and I think I have three very lovely ones from the United States.
Yeah, and there are some in Mexico, and they're in Germany, and, you know, these hoaxers, they don't have, you know, unlimited frequent flyer miles. And I can't believe that people would be so uniformly connected as to be able to create these things with similar treatments of the crops right down to the knuckles on the ground. It leads one to believe that, okay, there probably is a group of anarchists who are either poking fun at the metaphysics world, or they're well-funded to kind of deflate whatever following or whatever economic force is gaining in the crop circle world. I imagine that there are trade shows and conferences and everything that talk about these. And as millions of people have seen them on television and on the internet, and maybe hundreds of thousands have visited them over the last 20 or 30 years, the message that they're real, that you feel differently, that you have an experience when you're on the inside of them, is spreading all the way in the upper Northwest. I've even seen some of these films and listened to conferences of people talking about them. Ed and Chris Sherwood live in Santa Monica, I think. They've been out there for a number of years. There's kind of a movement that goes with it. Maybe they're being funded to defuse this or to break up the momentum of it, you know, to try to make it impossible to tell the difference between the real thing and the hoaxed thing, although they haven't been able to match the energy field in the middle of it. But how do they explain away the fact that this occurs in dozens of countries all over the world?
Well, indeed. You know, when you try to really get serious about nailing what's going on here and don't just follow your kind of instinctive imagination, I don't mean instinctive in a good way. I mean we're in a kind of collective, you know, idea of the world here. And when something outside the box appears, we are rightfully skeptical. You know, nobody likes to be conned, as somebody else in my movie says. And, you know, of course, you don't just buy every silly idea that comes along. But when you pay attention, when you really look at all the evidence, it becomes even more impossible that these things are all being hoaxed than that they are coming from some mysterious force, as wild as that is. And it is wild. It's very wild. You know, you're dealing in a universe that is so incredibly vast, and our nearest neighbor, you know, would take us forever to get to, whatever. So how can we be visited? How does this work? But then again, the ways of the world and the ways of science and possibility and what have you are also awesome. I mean, you think that here we are in a universe with billions, in a galaxy with billions of stars, our galaxy, and then there are billions of galaxies, and then they say there's even more universes. Oh my gosh! I mean, you just have to be humble and be in awe of everything that's going on, and then nothing seems too fantastic.
Well,
so,
that's true.
You know, here we are.
She's like,
and of course, it's also so thrilling.
Well, I have people ask me questions all the time. You don't believe in UFOs, do you? And I'm not much of a belief person. You know, I'm a scientist, but I come back at them with an equally ludicrous question, like, you don't believe we're alone in the universe?
Yeah,
do
right,
you?
Right. What's your PhD in, Brooks?
Physics.
Oh, all right.
It made me thoroughly
you
unemployed.
You can answer some questions I can't answer.
That's why we do. That's why I do radio, because I'm unemployable now.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, and that's kind of ruined everything too, because I dumbed down my resume one time. You're going to love this story. I was teaching mathematics at Gaston College in North Carolina. And I needed more income, so I am a certified quality engineer, and there happened to be a factory very, very close to the college, about two blocks away. And so I said, well, gee, I'll go in there and get a job as a quality engineer, and I'll fill in my daytime, and then in the afternoon and evenings I'll teach mathematics to people who want to go on and get upper, more advanced degrees. Well, I dumbed down my resume, and I walked in the door, and the HR manager met me there, and the plant manager, and they said, are you the Brooks Agnew? And I went, yeah. And the HR manager said, would you autograph my book?
Oh, how sweet.
I was not getting the job. So,
uh-oh. So,
and I didn't either. So that's kind of the curse that goes with it. But, you know, I really enjoy what I'm doing. And I can tell when I watch you in the film and the camera goes to you interviewing someone else or flying an ultralight that you had a blast making this movie.
Oh, indeed. You know, what a delight. You know, I'm so fascinated by this and had this, you know, sense of mission that I should bring this information to the world. And, you know, it isn't like working in a factory. You're in the middle of a miracle, and you're taking pictures of it and making sense of it and talking to fascinating people. The people who are plugged into this, who form a community that gathers in England every summer from all over the world. We all know each other. We come every summer. We compare notes. We hang out, you know, in the pubs together, trying to do our thing to take the pictures, write the articles, amass a body of work that's credible. These are people who left other professions. We have an architect who is teaching architecture at USC. We have fabulous artists who had real, you know, careers, and this thing just hooked them. So they, you know, one visit or a first exposure, and well, just like me, what's that? And the more they learn, the more fascinated they become. And, I mean, people have left their husbands. And, oh, there's one story in the movie that's funny about a divorce that ensued from a different opinion about the crop circle phenomenon. But people, actually, that research community, they've done that. They've left their other lives because it's like in Close Encounters, you know, those people, I've got to get there. I've got to, you know, be involved. People have actually really done that, and then, you know, that 20 years later, they're still there, and they're still, you know, singing the praises.
Oh, my goodness. Well, let me ask you a question. Do you have people just kind of pop in for a couple of weeks and then go back to their normal lives? Is this a mecca of sorts? Are there enough hotels to stay in? Is this a place that people go out at every single night and wait for them to happen before their eyes?
Oh, absolutely. You're in the magic territory there in this little concentrated area in England where most of them appear. And it's sizzling all summer. The bed and breakfasts are, there's lots of bed and breakfasts. They're all full. It's hard to get a room. There are tour buses that come by. There are people leading tours. Actually, if people do want to go over, you're much better off going with somebody, particularly the first time, who joining some kind of group. And they're lovely. I mean, they're not commercial, you know, in that kind of mechanistic corporate sense in any way. They're just the enthusiastic crop circle researchers have taken to leading tours because, you know, some of them have left their jobs. They don't have other. So one of the sources of income is now plying the crop circle trade. And but they're lovely people to go with. They really know their stuff, and they know the territory. They know, you know, how to find them. And people have fabulous times. But, you know, I don't think there's anybody who's ever been in a good crop circle who hasn't been permanently altered in, you know, their perspective on the world. You don't find people going over there and maintaining skepticism or ridicule or, you know, the people.
So nobody goes into a real crop circle and comes out of it and says they're still fake.
No, never. People are just fundamentally affected in very powerful ways by the experience of being in them. And there's nothing quite like that. I mean, for all the pictures you'll see, there's nothing like actually being in, you know, a good crop circle. You're just in awe. How could this be? I mean, what is it doing there? You know, such a peculiar thing.
I'm reminded of the movie Contact and the character L, who is this atheistic, not a believer in anything metaphysical whatsoever. It's got to be facts. Although she joins this CSETI team where she's searching for extraterrestrial intelligence, and she's listening and listening and listening. Something's driving her, which might be the loss, premature loss of her father. But when you watch the movie and you watch Jodie Foster's face, not what she sees, but what watch her face as she sees what it is the director has told her she's looking at. And that's the change. That's what I see happen to people when they go someplace and they see a UFO for the first time in their lives. Or
oh, yeah, they're permanently changed, no question.
Yeah, it is really incredible. And
that was a wonderful movie, by the way. I remember of all the movies, and I don't, you remember it better than I do in the details, but I do remember thinking, oh, this is an important movie. This is one that, you know, is really on the money.
Let me ask you a question about the crop circles, because most of them occur in Wiltshire or Glastonbury. Are there areas or particular farms that get hit with these over and over again? Do they reoccur on the same spot, or are they copied in other places, or are they just one of a kind and they appear someplace different every time?
Many questions here. Well, they're never duplicated exactly, although there are pattern groups. So, for instance, the first fractal arrived in 1996, and ever since then we've gotten patterns that are based on the idea of fractals. But you never get an exact replication of any of them, no carbon copy. Sometimes you get inverses. You get the crop is down and up, and then in an inverse it's up and down, you know, a kind of a mirror image of a crop circle. And those are always fascinating, the various mirror images that occur. Now, what was the other parts of your question? Let's see. We don't get the same pattern groups.
I wondered if they occurred in the same spot.
Oh, the same fields, right. Well, there's one field in particular that you can virtually count on. It's the one that received the formation that got the attention of the world, and we do quite a bit in the movie about that one. It was in 1990. The phenomenon had been going on for some time, but this one was much bigger, had a different shape. It just changed the nature of the phenomenon. It was like an up-leveling of the whole pattern reality of the phenomenon. And indeed, that's when the world started to pay attention. And that field, it's called East Field, gets them every, you can, I don't think there's been a summer that they haven't had them, and some of the major ones land in that field, and that may be because they like them. You know, there are other farmers who get them, and they'll cut them out. They'll take their whatever machine it is and make, you know, drive it through so that they don't want people in their fields. Some of them think it's, you know, it's the boys from the pub, and they're really furious. Others, whatever their reasons are. And I think that pretty much there's a scattering of the phenomenon in the other fields. There's lots of fields. These are small family farms over there still. We're not doing corporate farming in this area of the world. And I don't know that there's any other field that gets them year after year, although I'm sure, I know there have been fields that have had more than one, or, you know, different years. But Eastfield is the one that gets them recurringly. And it's the field where, before the phenomenon got sort of, we got distracted by the claims of those two guys that the world sort of bought into, that there was no real phenomenon, they had mounted a couple of very significant watches on that field. BBC was involved, Japanese television was involved, because it was the field they could count on. Not that, you know, during the course of their watch they'd necessarily get one, but you know, if they were going to watch anywhere, this is the field they were going to watch. And then funny things happened on those watches. Like there was one, I think it was for 3 weeks. The day they left, the day after they packed up, they got a crop circle. Because, you know, the crop circle makers are, you can't fool them. They're watching us. You know, they know what's going on. And they wink a lot. They seem to have a sense of humor. And so, you know, we leave, they come. And then there was one instance where, you know, it's very foggy in England, or it can be. And there was one instance in one of those watches where some kind of major fog descended. They did have motion sensors on the field. Nothing went off. No motion sensors went off. And when the fog lifted, there was a crop circle there.
Oh my gosh.
In another of, during those couple of watches, a circle appeared just outside the range of the cameras in the next field. So, you know, they're kind of saying, ha ha ha, you can't catch us, you know, but with a gentle wink, you know. We like that about the phenomenon.
That's interesting. One of my most faithful listeners, Alex, says, does your guest realize that most of these man-made crop formations appear in areas that have a shamanistic culture that use the formation to communicate with their gods and attract doors to their word? They're kind of instant hinges or temple structures of pagan traditions.
Well, I don't know about that. I haven't heard that. I mean, we've got lots of pagan. This little area has been a ritualistic with Stonehenge. You know, everybody knows about Stonehenge, and there are other artifacts that have been left from before. That this is a very manipulated landscape in this little area. Sacred ceremony's been done there for years. It's such gorgeous, gorgeous country. I mean, if you were going to, you know, wanted to commune with the divine, you couldn't find more beautiful countryside to do it in. And I think that's one of, you know, people often say, well, why are the circles there? You know, why the concentration in this area? And I think that's one of, again, we're speculating. We don't know. We can only, you know, look at the evidence and come up with our speculations about it, because we won't know till they tell us what some of the actual answers are to our questions. But one of the speculations that we do come up with about why this area is because it has such an ancient tradition of ceremony and sacredness. And all over the world, in fact, wherever the crop circles appear, they do tend to arrive near something ancient. Like in America, they'll typically come near Indian burial grounds. And they not only appear near them, they actually, all over the world, again, part of the phenomenon, they're very carefully placed in the landscape so that if there's a directionality to them, the mandalas won't have a direction. But actually, internally, sometimes there are things that point, and if you go and look, where's the sacred site that they've landed near, and what is the shape of the formation, the directionality, the pointing, the way it's laid out will go right to the center of the sacred site, or it will tangent it. It will go right to the side of it. In other words, somebody has made a choice about that. It's not accidental. And in fact, these things don't land where they cross farmers' fields. They'll land internal to a field. Sometimes they'll take up the whole space of a particular field, but they won't go out over the edges. Again, indication of intelligent design. Something has thought this out. Something has, it's not random, it's not accidental, it's not casual. And, you know, I mean, if you want to get into why would this phenomenon be occurring? What's the point? Or are we being helped? And how could it be helping us? And I think it's to inform us that we're not the only intelligence, because once we realize that, everything changes, and we need a massive change. We need a change of perspective where we're not so violent with one another, where we respect the earth. I mean, everybody knows now we're in big trouble. We need a change of fundamental ideas about what we're all doing here.
We've often talked about that on this program, that for instance, the U.S. government in 2010 is going to spend $1.3 trillion on defense and only $170 million on space exploration.
Well, that whole war thing, I mean, I just you know, I call me naive or juvenile or something. I don't get it. Why are we doing that? I mean, God, we've gotten so good at it. We've gotten so capable of destroying life on Earth. Why? I mean, this is such an incredible magic privilege to be alive, tough as it may get. Still, being human, wow, what a trip. And how can we be so ignorant and primitive, actually? Since we're so sophisticated in our technology, how can we be so primitive in our perspective and in our thought process?
It's true.
You know what? You know, you listen, well, however, you read the paper, you listen to television, it's so ordinary. The Department of Defense has issued, and so many people have been killed, and in this campaign, it's like, what? I listen and I can't believe this. And yet, of course, I can. But how can we be doing this? How can we still be behaving in such primitive fashion when we're so far along in our capacity to hurt, to do harm, you know?
Well, hopefully, I know how I felt when I was watching your film and when I finished watching your film. Maybe we should send a copy of this to each one of the members of the Joint Chiefs.
Oh, wouldn't that be wonderful?
Soften it.
Hey, you're planting a thought.
And, you know, it's interesting. Maybe that's what they're doing. Maybe they're coming here and they're saying, okay, we'll put these patterns down and people will watch them and they will see that as sovereign as they think their airspace is, we can come in and we can leave a message of peace.
Yeah, leave a message that other intelligence is engaging with you. Hello, hello, when are you going to get it? Right.
Well, you know, one of the things I watched on YouTube, it wasn't in your film, and I don't know if it's real, and I want to ask you.
Check me out, yeah.
It shows a couple of lights flying in, kind of doing a big S turn,
yeah,
and then heading out away from the camera, and underneath these lights, in the crops, forms the circle right there on film.
Yeah. Fascinating footage, isn't it?
Or is it hoaxed?
Wouldn't it be nice if it was real? You know, that came, that situation occurred in 1996, and it was the most thrilling thing to come down the pike. The crop circle community was beside itself with excitement, and then little chinks started to appear. This, that, and the other that didn't add up, that didn't make sense. And then the controversy started. Well, the controversy lasted literally, Brooks, for years. And you had your camps. And there was evidence. But then, oh no, the overriding that evidence was dummied up or whatever. And, you know, it was just a grand morass for years until finally the consensus seems to be now. And even so, there are holdouts who say, no, 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 it's for real. But I would say that 95% of the people who know what they're talking about will tell you now that it was done in a laboratory.
Wow.
I'm sorry to tell you that.
But it's an accurate reenactment of what happened.
Yes, exactly. Oh, exactly. Exactly. You could definitely see it that way. No question.
I just, you know, I'm so fascinated by the iconic nature of the crop circle. Is it an alphabet? Is it a piece in a series, a story, or some kind of grand message that in their mind only takes a few minutes to tell, but in our lifetime it takes 100 years for the sentence to unfold?
Well, all of the above, we might say, seriously, from many angles that you look at this, yes, yes, it would be that, it would be the other. And then, but the people inquiring usually are meaning to ask, well, is that what it's all about? Is it a puzzle where when we get the final piece, we'll know the picture? Or is it an alphabet, like hieroglyphs, and when we finally decipher it all, we'll get the message? And again, we're speculating. I don't think so. I think all of it is a bombardment of different ways of showing us that an intelligent source is delivering these things. And when are we, you know, when are we going to finally add it all up and say, whoa, this cannot be accidental, and it certainly cannot all be hoaxed, and something is, or some things, are is delivering all of this, and it's smarter than we are because it's visiting us. We're not visiting it. And they must be out there scratching their heads going, when are these people going to get us? How much do we have to tell them? You know, there are things you don't even know. That you want me to tell you something that's not in the film that you probably don't know? Another whole different dimension of how intelligence is being delivered.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a yes or no question.
Sure.
Hello, hello.
Yeah, I'm here. Tell me.
Okay, okay. So yeah, you said yes, right, right. I'm sure you said yes. Okay, so one year, not quite sure which year it was. It was in the 4 or 5, 6 years ago, one of those years. One of the researchers got a bright idea to check something. He had noticed that year there were groups of three that seemed to be coming in, maybe half a dozen groups of three, patterns that were very, very similar. And it was kind of unusual that they actually came down to being groups of three. And he thought, well, why don't I put it on a map, geographic, you know, and see where are these groups of three? How do they relate to one another? How do the three in each group relate to one another? Is there a relationship? And what he discovered was startling and yet another evidence of intelligent process. Something intelligent put this together. You don't even know about all the intelligence until you think of the right question to ask. You don't get the answer until you ask the question. So the question he asked was, is there anything going on geographically in these groups of three? So they plotted it on a map. These formations were miles apart, 6-7 miles apart, in each group of three. And when they looked at the map, what they discovered was almost to a precision, each group of three formed an isosceles triangle. And that's a triangle where two sides are the same and the third side is different. Well, is that an accident? It doesn't seem to be. It seems to be, as I say, something that was thought up on the other side. Let's see, what else can we do that will encode intelligence in these things so that these people get it eventually? And look what they did. They sent down groups of three in isosceles triangles on the landscape. Well, I just, you know, I found that fascinating. If I'd had more, you know, if I could have done a film that had everything in it, I would have put that in the film.
Mm. Well, it would be, you know, in geometry, we realize that any three points lay in a plane.
And you can make a triangle out of anything, yes.
A two-dimensional space is created by that. Now,
yes.
It is odd to say that the point at the apex of the acute angle happens to be equidistant in between the two points that make up the base angles. That is unique.
Very.
Very unique.
I mean, you can draw isosceles triangles, you know, no big deal, but that these groups of three were delivered that way in the landscape, miles apart. Whoa! Well, there are all kinds of correlations like that, that the people who really spend their lives poring over this information will come up with all kinds of fascinating things when they plot it on maps and what have you. Oh, my goodness, look. You know, and as I say, until they do these things, you know, the information is just floating out there, and it doesn't add up to anything until somebody decides to look for something. And so often when they look for something, they get something, you know.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Susanna, are they all veteran circle chasers out there, or are there a lot of newbies, a lot of tourists that come in for 1 or 2 days hoping to see something and then on back to Florida?
Oh,
or
definitely. It's hot tourist territory. Absolutely. I went the first time as a tourist. I joined a group, and it was Stonehenge, crop circles, and, you know, other sacred sites in the area. No, it's teeming with tourists in the summertime. Yeah. And we have a little cafe kind of gathering place. The tour buses go there. You can, they're actually changing their location this year, so I can't tell you where it is because they haven't got it settled yet. But, you know, you can go to a place.
Oh, we lost the call. We'll work on it with the producer here and see if we can't get her back. We are in the middle of a terrible thunderstorm right now. It's kind of passed over the house, slammed us with a bunch of hail about 15 minutes ago. I don't know if you heard it over the radio. But we'll try to get Suzanne back. It'll just be a moment. Don't go away. I wanted to make sure that you knew that you could be part of the program tonight by calling 415-762-1161. That's 415-762-1161. If you've been on one of these tours, why don't you give us a call and tell us what you found or didn't find. If you want to go on one of these tours, let us know. What's your motivation? When are you planning on going? How are you putting together a group of friends? Why do you want to go? And I would very much like to know how you feel about the Crop Circle phenomenon, the movement, the art show that's been going on pretty much your entire life, unless you're more than 100 years old, which you could be. It happens to be the fastest growing age group in America. I also want to make sure that you know you can pick up Remembering the Future. It's my newest book, 210 pages or so. This is the book that was born out of the lecture series I did last year called The Physics of the Soul. So this is called Remembering the Future, The Physics of the Soul and Time Travel. The book will be out in print in about 90 days. The publisher is working on it. We're trying to speed it through the process so that we can have it out before the convention in July up at James Gilliland's ranch. And by the way, if you're planning on going to that, this is going to be the year to break all the records. So you want to make your way up to that. Anyway, it's at rememberingthefuturebook.com, rememberingthefuturebook.com. You can get the ebook in your hands, get it read, and you will be given 25% off the printed version when it comes out in 90 days, and you'll be given the audio version of it when that comes out. Now, that's a great bonus for buying the ebook and beating the planet to reading the book. rememberingthefuturebook.com. We're back with our guest, Suzanne. Welcome back. My question, Suzanne.
What exciting thing was I saying that got the aliens to interfere with us here?
Well, I think it's a function of the thunderstorm that's been pounding the stuffing out of our city. While you were talking, we had quarter-size hail rake the neighborhood.
Whoa.
Now it's passed on, but I think the lightning struck the cell phone tower out there somewhere. By the way, if you're anywhere on planet or off planet and you can get to a cell phone tower, you can get to us, 415-762-1161. Your questions, comments, observations about crop circles. The question that I wanted to ask was relative to, you mentioned that intelligence is behind crop circles coming to the earth, that these beautiful patterns aren't just artwork. They're not just there to make fancy calendars. When you go there and you actually physically experience the crop circle, you're changed. And I ask the question, the tourists that come, are they all newbies? Are they veterans? Is it gaining momentum, losing momentum? Is there a change occurring in the consciousness of the earth because of crop circles?
Well, certainly everybody who visits is profoundly affected. And, you know, when is the 100th monkey going to, you know, set foot in a crop circle? I don't know. Who knows? We certainly don't have a preponderance of people who are paying attention to them, even though it's a robust tourist attraction. And I don't mean to denigrate it by saying it's a tourist attraction. It's wonderful that people come from all over the world, and they do. There are many books that have been written that are, you know, popular. There's certainly a field of intense interest, and it grows all the time. But how many, what percentage of our population, who knows? Certainly not the preponderance. Most people still, because, you know, anything that's really different, so different from ordinary reality. It takes some doing to, you know, for people to pay enough attention to it to know what's going on. And it's very challenging to the power structure. You get something that really will change the way humanity thinks, and the power structure is not sympathetic. You're not going to get support from all of the wheels that are enmeshed to create the worldview that we're in.
So you'll have a lot of lack of support, lack of interest,
and even active resistance.
They spend a lot of money on propaganda and advertising just to make sure we think the way that we do, like sheep, you know, heading for wherever we're heading. Suzanne, we have a caller. I think the name is Nansalua from New York. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, and thank you so much for all this information, okay, and all the work that has been done. One of the questions that I have is that we talk a lot about, you know, understanding so-called intelligence, okay, and maybe what we're dealing with is so unlike what we perceive as intelligence that has anyone ever gone in, like a spiritual person who can get energy from the other side and stuff like that, to go in and actually just ask, what is this here for? How will it help us? Give me some information. You know, like a spiritually, and I say spiritually just because I think a person who is a little more grounded in knowing that there's something outside of this world, not religiously, but outside of this world, would be able to ask, tell us what it is. You know, I believe in, I don't say I believe, I know that when you ask, you receive. Like in the areas where they're happening, the people are enjoying them being there, so they receive more of them. But has anyone ever asked, while they're in the crop circle, can you give us some information as to what this is here for?
That's a good question.
Well, I understand perfectly what you're saying, and indeed, the channels will. There are a fair number of channels who are what would we say? Some of the more highly respected channels. You know, the ones who mm-hmm. have maintained a presence and a visibility over the years, who have done that and who have come out with their information. I can't, of the things that they've said, I can't get any smarter or more informed or have more insight than the fact that we are being engaged by other intelligence. They don't seem to, I mean, there may not be any more to say than that in terms of the message or the point that's being made by whatever is delivering these. You know, if they wanted to make some, if they wanted to tell us something, you people should da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, they could be much more directive about it. They could write it out in the fields. Well, they don't seem to want to do that. They seem to want to lure us, you might say, into realizing that they are communicating with us and in the knowledge that that will change our world. And it doesn't need to be any more than that. And in fact, you know, how can we have an intelligent dialogue, or how can they be telling us anything when we're not really receptive? You know, we're not listening. How could, you know, we would just be ranting at the straight world saying, hey, hey, the crop circles told us, you know. Well, they just don't seem to be doing that. And I think also one other thing I would say about that is that this lack of hitting us over the head, you know, it's the question of why don't they land on the White House lawn? Well, first of all, I think we would shoot them. But aside from that,
yeah,
as we study, as we reach for them, including the channels, including the spiritual, you know, mastery kind of people who do inquire. But as we do all of that, and as we intuit and interpret and whatever, then we have actually really realized something. It is part of us. It's not something we've been hammered to accept, but it's something that dawns on us. And when it dawns on us, it's us. now we own it, you know? And I think that if I were going to be an intelligent change agent from some other dimension, I would want to do it that way. I would know, I would be enlightened enough to know that a dualistic kind of encounter, an argument, a forcing, would not be the highest form of engagement. And I would indeed just keep dazzling with my beauty and my brilliance until finally the realization dawned in enough people that they actually could influence the rest, you know, and turn the tide. So I think they're doing this in a very, what I would consider to be enlightened sort of a way. I'm very in awe and respectful of the whole methodology that, you know, we are being treated to here.
Well,
and
I was really asking because when you're going to the depths of interpretation, I thought you were looking for an answer to it, you know, like geometrically and the triangles that you explained. Because I feel just what you're saying, they're just there because they're there.
Yeah.
Of course, I don't think that sending 10 films to all of Congress would make 5 cents worth of difference.
Well, who knows? You don't know. That's a good idea, though.
Who knows? But
it
was a great thought.
That catches
my fancy.
Yeah,
it was a great thought. Maybe out of all of them, you could find one who would say, wow. But
yeah. But, you know, in terms
and you
of
never know.
The other thing I want to say about intelligence is that each formation of the, let's say, good ones, really has a lot of information in it. And when the season is on, there's one website that creates a page for each formation that comes in. It's CropCircleConnector.com. And if you get on CropCircleConnector.com soon, April, it could start in April, smattering in April, and May smatters a little more, June it starts to get full-blown. If you go on those pages, you'll see that each formation, people will contribute information to put on the page, and there'll be people from different disciplines. There'll be historians, there'll be archaeologists, there'll be philosophers, there'll be artists, there'll be people who know things about their particular field, and certainly mathematicians and geometers, who will add to the body of information of what each formation contains. And there's lots of stuff that's in each formation. Now, as I, you know, was saying before, I don't think that's about adding them all up so that, you know, if you put them all together, you get
the
message.
Yeah, I didn't think that either. I just thought if they were looking for an answer that maybe they could ask, but I think it's just beautiful to see them. I really follow them on the net, and I just experiencing the awesomeness of seeing it all over your screen. It's like, wow, you know.
Yes,
but
thank
yeah,
you,
way,
God.
Whatever,
kind of
a shard.
In a way, I kind of feel like we're sitting here like the apes slamming our sticks into the ground around the white or the black monolith.
Really?
We don't really understand what they mean yet. We just know they mean something, and we know we're having an experience when we get close to them, when we get inside of them, when we see them from the air. My youngest daughter, even when I got her into crop circles a few years ago, I just showed her a few pictures. The reaction was always the same. Wow, look at that. That is so cool. What do you do? I mean, you're having a reaction that does not have a language yet, or it doesn't have an alphabet. It doesn't have a meaning. There's no lexicon that allows us to communicate one with another what we feel. It's just, wow. So maybe the lexicon is being built.
Maybe that's the answer. It's the wow answer.
Yeah. As I said earlier, you know, it's just a few moments for them if they're dimensional travelers or travelers across space. But it's 100 years for us.
Yeah. You know, there are different speculations also about these things maybe not even being here for us to contemplate, even though we do, and, you know, we do to a great extent. But maybe they're here actually to plant some energy here that's useful to us particularly the ones that are formed with sacred geometry, which is most of them. Sacred geometry is the way the whole universe is put together. Our bodies are put together, plants are put together. Mm-hmm. It's the building block of form, and we are so out of joint and have gone so crazy in our perspectives and beingness that maybe what these things are doing is pulling us back to this fundamental harmony, you know, that their energy deliverers or attractions or what have you, to reharmonize us with this master pattern of the universe. That's one of the speculations, you know. And who knows? I mean, maybe so. I like the one about, you know, the fact that we're being bombarded with intelligence whereby we'll get it that we're not the only intelligence. And but these are speculations. They're all speculation.
But
and this is what the channels get
lastly
to. They get this kind of stuff.
What was that?
I want to thank you, lastly, for saying what you said about the war, because I don't think that we have been in a frame of mind to actually take a look at what a dumb idea war is.
Oh, really?
You know, we have people saying they don't like abortion, yet you can go to another country and kill somebody else's children. It's like,
I mean, really, isn't it just the most
absurd really
thing?
It's really so crazy that if we don't begin to say how crazy it is, nobody has the room in their mind to think, oh, well, we do war. I mean, we've done it before, we'll do it again. Until we begin to hear someone else say the nonsense of what are we spending money on hurting somebody else for?
Oh, all
you know,
of that. And, you know, we have these laws against killing, except you can do it in war, and then you turn your soldiers into murderers, and then they come back home, and, oh, my God, it's just
and
horrible.
They shoot somebody, and then they're on the wrong side of the law. So I don't think many of
war,
us have
it's
examined
not called
it.
Killing. It's called attrition, and it's very businesslike and not human at all. And I don't think it's ever been civilized, and I think the way that, I mean, my ancestors did the same thing. They're the Scots that made up the Templars on the western side of Scotland, and the legend goes back to the 13th century. I mean, we've been involved in war for seven centuries, my family, so I'm the one that doesn't seem to get it, I guess. I don't think there's any glory
well,
in it at all.
Maybe you're the one that's going to change it.
Yeah, maybe
cause
so.
Because you don't get it.
I'll be the
well,
one to go back
know,
and
I'm
buy
so
the
I'm so resonating
castle
with this
away
conversation
from the Brits.
That the ordinariness of war as if it's okay and that we don't even talk about that. We don't even talk about that fundamental perspective in which it's ridiculous to be doing this. You know, that's not part of our conversation yet, so...
Right,
but it's getting
right.
There,
well, we're coming up at the top of the hour.
Thank you so much.
I really appreciate the phone call. And,
I do, too.
I
thank
love
you,
your
caller.
Insight.
Very much. Very intelligent call. I appreciated it a lot.
Yeah.
I'll
are you really quick, are you planning on going over there sometime in the future and seeing one for yourself?
I've been to England. I didn't know that they came every year. I looked at them, and I didn't know it was in just one specific place.
Yeah, isn't it amazing? And
you know,
here you are, a really tuned-in person, and you don't even know what's going on. I mean, it's just amazing. It's a fabulous
phenomenon.
I
look at them, I say, wow. But I didn't know it was a specific, you know, because most of the time you're so in the wow factor, you don't really say, now, what's that address?
Well, you go to cropcirclemovie.com, and you get my DVD.
I'm going to that.
DVD.
I already wrote it down.
All right. That's the place to go.
All right. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Yes, I thank you too. All right, we will we'll be back in about 4 minutes. We're going to take a really easy musical break, see if we can let this storm pass over a little bit. I feel a little nervous having headphones on my head during a lightning storm.
Uh-oh.
But, we'll be back in about 4 minutes with more X Squared Radio and our guest, Suzanne Taylor. Don't go away. Welcome back to X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. We're coming to you live from east of the Appalachians. Intelligence, it seems, has awakened again and visited our world. Fairy folk, aliens, or perhaps from inside the earth. Great patterns, great energies, wonderful uplifting messages brought to us. By the way, that's Lisa Gerard in The Unfolding in her album Duality, for those of you interested in the bumper music. Welcome back, Suzanne.
Well, I'm still here. Have we got more to say, Brooks? I want to hear about inside the earth. Oh, no, you're interviewing me. Wait.
Well, we could certainly talk about that, because one of the things that our listeners write in from time to time is that crop circles may not be coming from outside the earth. Maybe they're coming from inside the earth. Maybe something's drawing it down to the ground, trying to teach us that the earth itself is alive. Is there a message like this in the crop circle community?
Well, you know, people want to pin down where are they coming from, and they say, well, tell us what you think, or, you know, they really want to deal with that. And I always say, I haven't any idea where they're coming from, another dimension, inside the earth, the future, whatever. But what I do call to mind when people say that is, now look, let's think wherever they're coming from, there's some design process going on. There's some drafting table or conference table, and there are creatures that are embodied. That's what designs. Embodied creatures design. So wherever this is coming from, it's not absolute. People say it's coming from nature. Okay, well, how is nature doing that? There've got to be embodied creatures. So, you know, that just leads you into more mind-blowing thoughts. But those, you know, that is where you have to go. You have to say, whatever's doing this has a design capacity, and that's a capacity of embodied creatures. So, I don't know.
Well,
embodied
the
creatures there in the, you know more about what's going on in the middle of the earth than me. What do you think?
Well, the idea that there's a life force in everything, and that reality is that life force in agreement with other forces so that energy can become matter. And now we have wheat, which started out as a seed from other wheat that was grown from the earth. It's made of earth. It comes out of the ground as an amazing miracle itself, that one seed can become 1,000 seeds, enough to feed us and plant next year's crop.
Amazing.
But it is a product of the earth.
Uh-huh.
And that maybe the message is growing out of the earth and laying itself down to let us know, hey, I am alive down here.
Well, you know, there was one interesting interview that I did, and I was trying to see if I could cut it in, and somehow I couldn't make it in the film. Stanley Messenger, who is now in his mid-90s and in a rest home, actually, but he was still operative and what have you, but he was old, and his mind was starting to loosen, you might say, at the times that we were working with him and interviewing him. And he's a real character in the crop circle world. Everybody, you know, deeply respects the wisdom that this man has. And in the interview that we were doing with him, he was even apologizing. He said, look, I'm sorry, but I'm going to tell you, this is the way it is. I had this experience. And he said he had kneeled down somehow and put his head and his ear to the earth, and he had sort of communed with the earth, and he was told, quote-unquote, whatever, he was told that the crop circles are the evolution of the plant kingdom. Just like, you know, in the world of science and physics, we've got quantum notions and ideas, and that's an evolution of our perspective. Well, he said that's the message he got, that the plant kingdom itself is becoming intelligent in a more evolved way, and the crop circles are somehow related to that.
Well,
I don't know. Is it only
crops that the media of this phenomenon occurs? Does it occur
in sand?
Well,
when we call them crop
circles,
we've got to say it's crop. But in fact, the patterns have been in, well, let's talk vegetation first, because we go outside of vegetation as well. They have been in virtually everything that grows, including young pine trees with stalks that were maybe 3 inches across, and they've bent over.
Oh, my goodness.
Not snap, they have bent at right angles. But they've been in strawberries, they've been in soybeans, they've been, you know, everything that grows virtually has had these formations occur. And then we've also had the shapes of crop circles in ice. The Charles River in Boston actually 1 year froze over for a couple of miles of round flows, and on all the round flows were these patterns. I saw a picture of that. Very strange, but true. And then you get ice circles in Scandinavian countries, and they'll show up online with these gorgeous
patterns
in them.
From no snowmobile tracks, no dog sled tracks.
No. Very inexplicable. And there have been some things that have occurred in sand as well. I'm not so sure that the sand wasn't, I can't really speak for that, but the ice, I know, has been accounted for.
Well, maybe is it the earth sending us a message? Is it the plant world? Is it, some force or intelligence inside the earth saying, hello, we're here, we're about to have an allergic reaction here if you don't quit it?
Well, wouldn't we like to know? Wouldn't you like to know? God, you just want to know. What's going on? Where are these things coming from? You're so eager to find out.
Well, I love the excitement in your voice when you say, what's going on? How are you going to go over again this year?
I don't know. You know, the film has really got me by the, hand here, and it takes me where I go, and I don't have a plan for this summer yet. I've been in lots of places so far. I just got back from Mexico, actually. They'd had a huge expo down there in Mexico City, and I was a speaker down there. I wasn't even really showing my film. I was just showing clips. I love speaking. I love speaking about, the state of the world, where we are, where we could be, where we need to be, with the circles always as kind of the, kind of fundamental. And, who am I? How did I get to where I am? And can I take you with me on this ride to be a passionate servant of this creation and take us to the next level, I just got lots of energy for that. So I don't know if I'll be in England this summer or not.
Well, I enjoy that as well. I started out just an author of a book and had no idea that people were even interested in the creation of the earth or the destiny of the earth. And gosh, a few months later, it was an Amazon bestseller and I was out on tour just like you are, so I enjoy that part of
the
tour.
I know, you're a speaker also. I saw you were in a speaker lineup. Are you going to Mexico City, actually? I saw you on a... No, was that it?
I was,
saw you in a
and they were not able
to
raise the money, so they had to cancel it.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Too bad.
That's about the third or fourth time I've been invited to speak in Mexico City. And the organizers just couldn't put it together.
One was well put together. This was Jaime Musan, who's the big UFO crop circle man in Mexico. In fact, all of the Mexican Americans up here know who he is. My gardeners know who he is, they did a beautiful job. We were all expenses paid. I had a hotel room with a jacuzzi tub. It was quite wonderful. So I lucked out on that one. That one was good.
Yeah, well, I haven't been at it long enough. I'm a newbie at it. I want to talk about the future of what's going to happen as we near 2012. Are these things increasing in frequency? Are they increasing in complexity? Are they becoming more intense in their message and in their ability to make us really sit up and take notice? I mean, right now we're almost to the point where we're going, oh, yeah, another crop circle. Hey, is it as nice as the last one we saw? No? Well, okay. Well, let me know. You know, I kind of see that the blasé kind of matter-of-fact, run-of-the-mill crop circle kind of mentality beginning to sink in. And until we show a film like yours or a piece of music or we have a speaker come in and say, look, I was there. This is an amazing thing that happened. What's changing? Is it?
Actually, the phenomenon is so full-blown that the only thing that really changes so far has been different pattern groups. And this last year, in fact, we got something very different from what had preceded. There was a jellyfish, there was a dragonfly, shapes of creatures, and they were not particularly geometric. Well, there was some geometry involved in some of them, but they were very, very different. And again, you know, I think the phenomenon is going, well, let's try something else here. But now what could it do? Here's what I'm pulling for. I'm pulling for all of a sudden 100 of them appear in the same night all over the world.
That would
get our attention. And, you know, the news media, actually, the way the world works, the way the news media works, has nothing to do with the circles per se, but it's just the standard way it works, is that anything that's ongoing is not a subject of any interest to the news media. You can't call a press conference about crop circles, for instance. The only time you will get press attention is in an ongoing situation where something very different happens. And the last time that happened in the crop circle world was that formation that was the size of two football fields that we've talked about, because it was so huge and it was beautiful, you know, as, you know, many of them are, but it was so impossible to think that any hoaxing had gone on. It was beyond the beyond, and CNN was there. The world media was there. Everyone was there. That was 2001. But as a phenomenon that just kind of goes along in beautiful fashion, but nothing uniquely different about it, you won't get any news. So what could the news be? I mean, how much, they can't get more beautiful. They're as beautiful as they can be. Large, well, we've had that, the large, you know, huge. Larger, I don't know. I like the idea that, you know, the next thing they're going to spring on us is so many at one time that, you know, again, something new happens and they get our attention. But, you know, I don't know. What do you think about this 2012 business in terms of prophecy? I have a feeling that what's really good about it is it gets us talking and thinking. We're all comparing notes. We're delving into the possibility. How does the world work? Is there a master plan? I mean, all these are very good conversations to be having, because, you know, they get us out of our ordinary, mundane, everyday lives to really open our minds to what could be, and that's very good for us, you know.
I think that there's some teleology that is unfolding, and we're either unwittingly or unswervingly following its path. It's more that, at least with respect to 2012, you had ancient civilizations whose leaders were so good at tapping into the arrow of time that they were able to see some 1,500 years in the future, and they decided to leave a message for us. Now, that's grand on a couple of scales. First of all, either they had so much wealth that they had no poverty in their society whatsoever, and they could spend generations on this message, or they felt so connected to the future that they decided to leave this message at all costs. And that brings up this recurring idea that maybe we get more than one shot at mortality. Maybe Pakal got his message across to the people so well that for at least a couple of generations, while they put this message together and put it into stone and left it for us, that he actually helped them believe they were leaving it for themselves in the future.
Oh, isn't that an interesting thought? Well, nothing is impossible, you know? When you see, you know, you get insights into strange things, like children who will tell you about past lives and they'll check out something that has happened halfway across the world, or, you know, some data that the child had no way to be plugged into, and it turns out to check out, oh, what's going on? Something much grander going on in this universe where we're all connected. We're all still part of the Big Bang. We're still banging out there. We're part of the stardust that started this universe. It's in us. So, you know, nothing's impossible. But it is hard to contemplate, isn't it? Hard to take in.
Well, I think you probably agree with me that in some respects, Suzanne Taylor feels like a much more ancient being than a single lifetime can account for.
Well, that's true.
And I'm not trying to win or convert anybody here, but I think if you listen to this program long enough, and we've been on the air now 5 years, eventually you're going to look in the mirror one day and say, you know, I really know. I don't feel, I don't believe, I know I've been around a lot longer than what my calendar is telling me.
Yes.
And so, you know, some people, well, I would say, as it says in some of the ancient writings, including scriptures, wherever there are two beings, one being will be greater than the other. It has, in that logic, a statement layered in it that we didn't all come to be at the same moment. We evolved. We grew out of a single source somewhere. And the nearer we get to resonating with that, the more impressed, the more overwhelmed we are when we walk into one of these crop circles. It's not like we're walking into a wheat field. It's like we're walking home.
Wow, that's a lovely thought. That's quite a lovely thought. I like it. Well, something phantasmagorical going on in that way in which we can't really pierce the veil. You know, we have no way to really see other than some intuitive kinds of things. Where do we come from? Where did it all start? You know, it's the most fascinating question, and the one that, you know, probably we'll never have the answer to. We just have to live in some amount of mystery, but in also a great amount of awe at how incredible.
I have a feeling the answer is coming. I love your manifestation, the idea that what would really knock the socks off of every news organization, every naysayer, every person who is as spiritual as a rock, is hundreds of crop circles appearing all over the world at the same time, on the same day, everywhere, all kinds of different patterns, big ones, little ones, complex ones.
You know, there were 35, as you saw in my film, or heard in my film, one of the people says, there was one night in England in the early 90s when there were 35 of them appeared in one night. You would think that would have gotten some significant attention.
35 in one night?
Yeah, 35 of them in one night. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
now,
a big wow.
That,
I mean, how many hoaxers are there? You know,
not
many.
You can't put together a team of artists to do 35 crop circles.
All over England. You know, they were wherever they were, you know, in a wide swath of England anyway. Yeah.
Wow.
So what, you know, it's funny. It's like some of the things are just obvious. There are things you see and still, I mean, like Bush getting elected. You know he didn't get elected, but there he is. He's the president, you know. So 35 of them, yeah, well, that's not possible. Okay, next, you know. You know, we just, okay. You know, some things are just so impossible to grapple with that we see them. You know, they're clear that they can't be, but there they are. So okay.
Well, that's it. I mean, it just, you know, it's almost the final word when you realize that something beyond explanation, beyond debunking, and in this genre, whether you're talking about UFOs or aliens or ancient civilizations, there's a lot of debunking that goes on, and there's a lot of energy that's spent in debunking.
Well, isn't that ridiculous, really? But again, as the smart person in my film says, Americans hate to be conned, maybe all people. We're so resistant to it that we prevent valuable information from coming in. God forbid we should, you know, be suckers and buy into something false. And what I always say about this phenomenon is, wait a minute. Pay attention. Be open to it. Worst that happens is you decide after you really pay attention that, no, you don't think there's anything to it. But for heaven's sakes, pay attention. You know that there are people, I'm such a crop circle person that I'm out there kind of leading with that all the time. And there are people who actually get angry. They walk away from me in a huff. They get irritated. And I think it's because the people who do that the most are the intellectuals, the really smart people. And I think it's because I'm an intellectual. And they think I have somehow deserted the fold. You know, I've gone south. I've gotten crazy. And it really makes them angry. It's the weirdest reaction. And you say, well, wait a minute. There's evidence. No. There's no listening at all. They're just angry.
Yeah, you're not a believer. You're a prover. You're an evidence gatherer. You know, you're not a zealot. You're not a crop circle zealot. You don't have the amulet.
Well, that is what I really am, but they don't give me time of day, you know. They'll never find out. They just closed, and, you know, it's a very strange reaction, this kind of anger reaction. Very, very bizarre. But then again, human beings are very bizarre, don't you think?
We all have our prejudices and our fears. You know, we have our sovereign airspace into which we will not allow reality to creep. I was realizing that, you know, we're kind of a I'll believe it when I see it people, and then when we see it, we don't believe it. I ask people sometimes, you know, what do you believe? Oh, I'm Baptist. Oh, really? Oh, that's great. What's a Baptist? And they say, come on, you never heard of a Baptist? Come on, I was raised Baptist. No, I've heard of them. No, believe me, I've heard the word. What's a Baptist? And they don't have a clue.
Well, they just are that, right?
Yeah, they can't tell you. It's because, you know, they've got this tattoo on them that they just can't shake, nor do they want to. They don't want to realize that they are tattooed. And so we have crop circles popping up from time to time throughout history. We see it in ancient art. We see it in medieval art. They started showing up in the, 1200s in the UK. They were blamed on fairy folk and, you know, all kinds of supernatural entities which they created in their stories. But we don't really know whether they come outside the world, inside the earth, from another dimension into this dimension, like God's finger sticking through the veil and drawing on stone tablets before Moses' face. You have to get to a point where you say, what's going on?
Well, you know, if you go back in history, as we mentioned in the movie, which, by the way, we must say them and tell them again, go to cropcirclemovie.com, where you will get the irresistible offer to buy with free gifts and all the bells and whistles, cropcirclemovie.com. But when you go back, as we mentioned in the movie, to Galileo, who, you know, Copernicus and Galileo came up with this startling fact that the Earth was not at the center of the universe, which, of course, is true, and they put him under house arrest. I mean, they were not happy at all with this, and it took a fair amount of time for him to be proved right. But they didn't say, oh, how interesting. Is this? Could this be true? No, they arrested him.
At least they didn't take him out and burn him at the stake.
Well, maybe that's right. That was a little bit of progress, right? That's true.
Maybe he was so smart that, you know, he actually solved the problem of indoor plumbing for the community. Who knows?
But, I mean, that is, you know, really true. And there is such resistance to by it's a very complex world. All the gears are in place, and when you're going to change the mechanism, whoa, you know, that's not a simplistic kind of thing to do. And as we spoke about before, particularly the power structure, because when you change the mechanism, everything changes, and a power structure likes power. I mean, it's just human nature, really. I'm not even really making a critique. I'm just kind of making an observation. And
well,
so,
it is. I mean, look at us. We in 1908, heavier-than-air flight was impossible. Everyone knew it. And Orville and Wilbur Wright spent all that time struggling with their stupid motor, which they finally learned to cast and make run. But perhaps that struggle is exactly what it took to make sure they could make their airplane fly further than 150 feet. A lot of people don't know this, but it took off the ground, which I'm pretty sure Wilbur urinated himself at that moment. But then you have to realize that the plane had no ailerons, okay? It only had a rudder and an elevator. Those of you that are familiar with flying know that if you can't adjust the angle of the wings, you're going to spiral into the ground and die. I have a feeling that the plane was beginning to wing over, and Orville, not having any experience flying, in fact, no one had experience flying up to that moment, didn't know what to do, so he promptly killed the engine and landed it again safely in 150 feet. It wasn't until later they added the twisting ailerons to the wings where they could do controlled turns. And then they went over and flew it for 45 minutes over Paris, and people still didn't believe that they were up there flying. But the point is that once he did it, people said, oh, yeah, that's how it's done. Well, very soon, we're going to learn how to compress gravity and shove it out the back end of our craft just the same way we do air in a jet engine, and we're going to break the speed of light, just like we broke the speed of sound. So everything's going to change again. The mechanism, as Suzanne says, we're about to grab the gear shift and move it to the next gear.
Well, it does seem that way, doesn't it? You know, this. We have some sequence in the film where we talk about the information that's coming about UFOs with all of the testimony that's being given by people who were not allowed to speak before this, and all of a sudden there does seem to be a great escalation of credible information. People in high positions, people in government, people in the military, who can be trusted, who are attesting to the fact that something's going on. So there does seem to be something quickening out there. I don't know, you know, people ask about, 2012, and maybe so, maybe because we're so busy about 2012 that somehow all of this is all in that same continuum where maybe we are headed for you know, real shift of understanding, real comprehension of the fact that we are being visited, and it's a different world. There's certainly more going on in the public eye. I mean, even Larry King has all these programs on now with ex-military and government people. Wow, you know, that's pretty down to the popular hardcore. So maybe we are headed for, you know, really fascinating revelation. You know, last year they showed my film at the X conference in Washington, D.C., which is about to take place in May again this year. And that's the put on by the people who have the real leading energy on getting disclosure to happen, and not just disclosure that there's UFO stuff going on, but actual disclosure that there's been contact with ETs, and there seems to be a huge body of evidence that that's the fact, and. You know, anybody who has any kind of interest in that, you should look up the X conference and think about getting yourself there this year. It ends every year with a press conference at the National Press Club, very prestigious. Last year, when they showed my film, Edgar Mitchell was the main speaker, and he had just created huge news in the world press about his statement. He was sixth man to walk on the moon, and his statement had, which he'd made on a radio show not very long before this conference, had made the world press, and the statement was that, yes, there are ETs and that Roswell was a real incident. And, you know, when I flew home that afternoon, and they had one of those, I was on a plane that had one of those screens in front of us where they were getting television, and I had CNN on, and all that, through that whole flight, the crawl at the bottom where they keep, you know, looping the headlines, they just kept looping that there, and they had also real news stories about it a couple of times, but they just kept looping that. Edgar Mitchell says, we are being, whatever the statement was, that ETs are among us. I thought, yay, this is fabulous. So, you know, make the X Conference something in your listeners' sights there to take a look and see, because these people are really on it, and it's fascinating, you know, what the government does, what it doesn't do, and some of the openings that really are there where, you know, they've seen that the government, you know, has some interest in this and possibly is going to make some headlines.
Well, I have to say I've got great respect for Stephen Greer and Stephen Bassett, who
that's Stephen Bassett's conference, right?
So much of their energy. I mean, Stephen is an intellect, and he never stops. He never gives up. And I've seen him low, and I've seen him, you know, have a fair amount of success. But he never gives up. And I tell you, the world is going to owe that man a great debt of gratitude when
Which
all
Stephen
this.
Stephen, are you speaking about?
Stephen,
you could be
Bassett.
Talking about both of them.
Well, yeah, I mean, both of them have done a lot, but you got to admit, Stephen Bassett's the guy that's picked up the pieces and carried it on. He's
he is absolutely just devoted to making this happen, and a gorgeous being. Really, and that's so sweet that you say that we will be grateful to him, really, because he's rather selfless about it all. He's given his life to it.
No question about it. No question. I have spoken with him on the same venue, and he's been on this program a couple times, and we think the world of Stephen. He just does a great work.
Good.
So
well,
if you out there,
send everybody
feel
to the X Conference. It'll be in May, and they're actually having it at the National Press Club this year, the conference itself, a very, very hotsy-totsy location.
Yeah, I remember, I think it was May of 2001 when Stephen Greer had the granddaddy of them all, the one that started it all. I don't know,
Didn't we think it was all going to happen then, too, when he had all this testimony at the Disclosure Project of all those military people, all those government people testifying, and we thought, oh, finally, it's out in the open. Oh, no.
No follow-up. Nothing happened after that. Just
wasn't that that's another Galileo or whatever, you know. No, hey, you know, we see it, but we don't see it, you know.
Well, we just keep plugging away. You know, we provide a venue for people to come on, and I'm so glad that you were able to come on the program tonight. We have a lot of chatters that have been clicking away at us. A lot of my questions have come from what they've sent me tonight. We had the call from New York. I have to tell you, a lot of times, even though we'll have 20, 30,000 people listening live, they sit out there and listen. They don't want to call in. I mean,
no, Suzanne, I notice that when I'm on radio shows. Yeah, people are not big callers, right? Right. It's nice to get to talk to people, though. Nice. That lady was lovely. I liked her a lot. But I'll tell you something also. I am so grateful in my own life that I have this interest, because it keeps me very alive. And I think the world's a real hard place to be in these days. I mean, I know it is. And I'm so glad that I see something that's outside the shell of ordinary reality, and that I'm not depressed and oppressed exclusively by how difficult the world is and how ignorant it is, and that I've just got this kind of, you know, I'm just so appreciative that somehow or other I was able to tune in and really see beyond the shell of ordinary reality, and it does keep me very, very passionate, you know.
Yeah, and it's nice to be passionate and to have passion. I think from time to time, and governments do this and individuals do it too, we get caught up with having stuff, and we realize that ownership of anything is really the non-motivator. It should be the icing on the cake, but the cake itself is the passion, exactly what Suzanne is talking about.
For sure. You know, it's funny. I used to be an actress, and I was married to a very successful producer, comedy writer, actually. He was the head writer on the old Dick Van Dyke Show. And he created Marlo Thomas' show, That Girl, and he was very successful. And it was before Women's Lib. Hate to date myself here, but... and he was not too keen on my leaving the house and the babies. But I would sneak out and do commercials, and I was very successful making commercials. I could do them in one day, you know. It didn't really take away from the family. So that's where I became. It wasn't exactly my highest aspiration when I was a drama major in college, but nonetheless, that is where I became most successful. And so I had a conversation one day with another wife of another producer, and she said, "Oh, I'm so envious of your career." And I thought to myself, my little dinky career, I'm making commercials. I wanted to be on Broadway, and I'm making commercials. And I said to her, "You're envious of my career?" And she said, "Yes." She said, "At least you know what kind of work you're out of." And I thought, oh, God, how funny. You know, I was out of being a movie star. I was out of being a Broadway star. I was making these little commercials. But at least I knew what my passion was. I thought, oh, I never forgot that. So it's always wonderful to have a passion, indeed. Keeps you going.
It is. Oh, I'm telling you. I joined this Inner Earth Expedition in 2005. I had no idea that I was going to be elected to be its leader in 2006 after Stephen Curry passed away. And, you know, to sit here and realize that we have the greatest expedition in history laying in a business plan for 2 or 3 years. I don't know how many conferences I've spoken about it at. And not be able to raise the funds to charter the ship to take the expedition.
I want to go.
I
want to go. Wait a minute.
Yeah. 120-foot seas and 70-mile-an-hour sub-zero winds aren't attractive to everybody. But, hey, you can be in the ship and look at it through one-inch glass. It's fine.
Really? Really? Yeah, but isn't it? We really are lucky that we're tuned in, you know, and juicy and all that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah. It definitely keeps you young and energized. And what a great way to live.
Well, I really am grateful for it. You know, I do see people all around me struggling without anything that, you know, lifts them, and it's a hard place to be, you know. I try to keep, when there are people who come into my realm, I try to excite them about crop circles. Say, come on, get on my trip, you know. it's a good ride.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. There's no doom and gloom in it. I really appreciate you coming on the program tonight. It's, again, 3 hours go so fast here. We just have a friendly discussion, and we knock intelligent thoughts back and forth, and for some reason people just keep on listening. We've been here 5 years.
Oh, it's because you're a smart guy. You know, you hold the fort here very well. So it's good to talk to you. It's easy to talk to you.
Well, I appreciate that. I really do. And you make it easy because you're just a good presenter, and you make good, clear thoughts, and it makes it a pleasure to have you on the program.
Oh, how nice. Well, tell people to, your audience, to have me elsewhere. I'd love going to Mexico City. I'd never been there before, so that was wonderful.
Museum of Anthropology? That's a really great museum.
No, I actually didn't get to do Mexico City because, you know, when I'm not doing crop circles, I'm not doing my job. So when I was finished at the conference, they did take us, though, the first day to the pyramids. They have Teotihuacan. I'm probably not saying
Teotihuacan.
That right. Okay, thank you. You said it right. Wow. Now, wasn't that... That was thrilling. There are two pyramids, pyramid to the sun, pyramid to the moon, and then a whole complex where the ruins of structures are there, and it was so thrilling to be there.
Yeah, it's really something. Did you hike up to the top of the Temple of the
Moon?
Well,
I hiked halfway up to the top. I didn't get up to the, because the guide we were with said, you know, your view is just as good here as from the top, and it was, you know, it was a bit of a hike.
I thought my lungs were
going
to come out of my mouth.
Doing anything, but I was
you're
in already
at 8,000 feet, and the climb is like 60 degrees. You might as well be climbing a ladder.
Oh, and very tiny little shelves to put your feet on, you know, of the stones that come out that form the ladder, so to speak. Oh, that was a little scary.
Going up is hard on the thighs, and coming down is terrible on the knees. Because you want to face forward, but you're looking almost straight down, so you want to turn around and come down backwards.
I couldn't quite contemplate that, but I wondered also how somebody else in my car, who was the girlfriend of another speaker, Italian speaker, had 4-inch high heels on as we're going. They actually split off from us and they did their own thing, but I thought, how is she, she's got 4-inch high heels on? What? but I saw her the next day at lunch, so I know she survived.
That's great. Well, listen, have a good year of conferences, and we might run into each other out
there.
Well,
I hope we do, for heaven's sakes. You know, we're traveling the same, plying the same territory here, more or less.
Yeah, well, I plan on going out again this year. I've been concentrating on this electric car company for the last few months. If I can get it up and off the ground, then we'll head back out on the lecture circuit.
Well, you and I are allies, so, you know, let me know when something good is going on, and I'll let you know, and, you know, we'll travel some roads together, perhaps. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, that would be great. That would be awesome. I'd love to do that.
That's after people go to buy my DVD at CropCircleMovie.com, right? Right.
CropCircleMovie.com rolls right off the tongue. Easy to type in. The link is at X
squared. It's so easy to remember. CropCircleMovie.com. I mean, you know, what could be easier?
Exactly. Good commercial. You're good at it.
Well, thank you. See, I used to do commercials, really.
Well, it's more fun selling.
I wouldn't know how to get dressed without Dial soap. Blah, 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 blah.
Say laundry detergent, but, crop circles are a much better sell. You feel much better about it.
Oh, I've definitely upped my ante here, really, for sure.
Clean yourself on the inside.
Right. Very cute.
All right, Suzanne, you have a wonderful week. I've enjoyed having you on the program. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks a million, Brooks. I've enjoyed it a lot. Bye now.
All right, good night. Earth Explorers, March is coming to an end. Spring has kicked in full blast. We just went through a wonderful thunderstorm over here on the eastern side of the Appalachians. I know that you feel like things are about ready to break loose, and I think they are too. Be sure to do the best with your life and treat one another as well as you can, and be positive and listen to what's going on with your life, with the universe, because something is going to come your way very soon, and it's going to be the conveyor that you need to climb out of wherever it is you think you're stuck. So we'll be back next month. It will be next month. It will be Easter Sunday. So we're going to have a very unique Easter message for those of you that I've gotten a little tired of the traditional one, or you get the traditional one in the morning and then you can come on with us in the evening and get another one. I think you'll enjoy it. We'll see you next week on X Squared Radio. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.